Welcome back in everyone to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. I am so excited about the show we are talking about today. It stems off of one of my favorite plays, in my opinion, one of the best plays in the American theater canon. And joining us to talk about their new piece is the playwright and director, Luke Bond. He's here to tell us more about Still Waiting for Lefty. It's playing July 4th through the 6th at Teatro Litea, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting teatrolitea.org. It should be noted that the tickets for the show are very, very affordable. $15 if you buy in advance, $20 at the door. All of this covers service fees and everything. I mean, this is the perfect summer night out, and what a show to be seeing too. So why don't we waste no more time? Let's welcome in our guest, Luke. Welcome into Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited you're here. I can't wait to be sharing the show with our listeners. As we talked off air, Waiting for Lefty is one of my favorite plays. It was the crux of my collegiate career. I had a teacher that taught it brilliantly. I think it's so relevant, especially now more than ever. And now you've taken from that and written the show, Still Waiting for Lefty. Tell us, what is this show about?
Well, in case if you're not familiar with the original works, then I'll talk about that one for a little bit. It was produced in 1935 by the Group Theater. Clifford Odets was the writer. I mean, the Group Theater actually was not really interested in producing it, so a lot of the Group Theater actors were in it when its first run, but then when they saw the audience response, then they got more involved in its production, and then its Broadway run, where it ran in repertoire with another show. But the original show is very heavily influenced by the 1934 cab driver's strike of that time. Of course, we're in the heart of the Depression at this time period, so the cab drivers union and their strike, I think, was very much a symbol for what was going on in a lot of the country, which is, of course, what has been going on a lot in general. And yes, so that was 89 years ago, and looking at the play now and our world now, and it's amazing to read it and see how little has changed and how there are certain lines and moments that sound like something you would hear someone say today on some public figure would say these sort of exact same ideas that really have not transformed a lot over the years. I think our education twists things to one side a little bit very often, but then when you actually go back and read the works of the people who are writing of that time, you see that how little people have changed our culture, how little humanity has changed. So yeah, I wanted to update it. And my adaptation is a little hackneyed. The first act is a little bit closer in semblance to Odets' play. There's a couple of scenes that are slightly similar, but then towards the second act, it really just becomes this hackneyed mosh of what the original used to be. So yeah, the title is almost more of a cheeky wink, more so. Essentially what I'm trying to say is you shouldn't go into the play expecting to see Odets' play. It's not that. But yeah, I'm very proud of it. It follows the stories of different protesters who are protesting a large corporation, and the working conditions that they have, and the fact that their union is trying to tell them to not go on strike, even though all the workers want to go on strike. Yeah, and so we follow the different lives of different protesters and how their lives are personally either affected by the strike or their work environment or their all sorts of different circumstances or conditions. Yeah, and we get to see, the corporation pull its underhanded tactics to try to disarm the union or disrupt the union or break it up or prevent them from striking and all that stuff that we sort of, just saw last year. Last year, there was a record number, by record, I mean by a dozen years, not by multiple dozens of years, but record of number of labor strikes and labor disputes. There was over 423. And yeah, and that's, of course, obviously the people in my occupation and in my circle, who are a lot of artists and writers and actors, were very heavily affected by the writer strikes and the actor strikes, even though that was more so in the film world. But there's an incredible ripple effect in the entertainment industry. When film actors are not getting work, then they're auditioning for plays. And when they audition for plays, then it makes the talent pool that much bigger, and it makes the competition that much harder. And it really affected everything everywhere. And, it happened right after the pandemic too. So theater was already at this very, I think it was Eugene O'Neill who said that theater is the longest dying art form of all time. So yeah, we just saw that accelerated a little bit in the past few years.
That is incredible. Incredible. I love it. So you've kind of already touched on this a little bit, but I would love to dive a little bit more into, you know, what inspired you to pen this piece?
I mean, I'm a writer, so it's what I do. I have many scripts, and so deciding which one I'm going to focus on and which one I'm going to try to amass the resources necessary to make it happen, there's so many factors that go into that. So inspiration is a nice term, and there's certainly some sentimental aspects to it. I've always really loved Odets. I've always had a great admiration for the group theater, as does anyone in theater, and I've always wanted to pay homage to that. But ultimately, this script, you know, was something that I felt was worth doing, partially because it's such an enormous cast, I could have a better chance of pulling in a crowd. And, I realize it might be cynical to talk about it in these practical terms, but I have many scripts, and inspiration is ultimately for amateurs. It really can't be relied upon if you want to be doing something consistently. If you want to do something consistently, then it has to be, more of a discipline. So inspiration is great, but it's just a tool. It's a convenience, right, to doing what you need to be doing to be a storyteller, right? So yeah, I obviously, Odets' original work was very influential. All of his entire body of work was influential. And then, of course, I read all the readings of Harold Perman and Cheryl Crawford and Lee Strasberg and Stella Adler and Elia Kazan and the people who were either responsible for creating the group theater or were nurtured by the great theater. So yeah, just getting a sense of that time period and what their souls were like at that point and a little bit of the vernacular and the structure. There's a couple of scenes that are a little bit out of place at a time that are, pretty more directly taken from Odets' work, specifically the rally scenes, simply because the work is universal and striking has become this universal aspect to human existence since the Industrial Revolution, right? So it's just, it could be at any point, any time, any place, these labor disputes that seem to continue to happen at all times.
That is fantastic. I love that answer. I know that as we are speaking today, at this time of recording, the show has opened and is running, but I would love to know, what has it been like developing the piece?
Because I have great people involved, it's always just a really special privilege and something that it's worth putting all of your resources into trying to cultivate the environment that I've managed to have. But I've been in rehearsal, 30, 35 hours a week for the past month and still working on top of that, as of all of my actors. I mean, thankfully, they don't have to commit that much time to rehearsal. One of the reasons why the play was possible was because so many of the scenes we follow individual characters who only rarely pop up in other scenes. There's a vignette nature to it. So I can schedule rehearsals with actors fairly easily because it's only two or three people per scene. And then there's a couple scenes where there's six or seven characters, but those ones had to be, scheduled far in advance. And then any scene that had the full cast of 22 people had to be scheduled even farther in advance. But yeah, it's really been fantastic just watching people who you admire and who you like and who are really good at what they do and really passionate and really, hardcore artists, because they are certainly not being paid a lot. So they're here because they want to be a part of something bigger. They want to be a part of stories they care about. They want to work with people that they like working with. And that's really, what's so touching for any time you do a process like this, where there really is very little money involved. It's just a bunch of people who are really passionate getting together to organize something and organize a story that we want to tell.
That is fabulous. That is fabulous. I love that. Well, now you've kind of, again, touched on the answer to this question, but I would love to know, is there a specific message or thought you hope that audiences take away from your piece?
You always want that to be whatever's best for them or whatever's going through their mind at the moment. But I hope that people can walk away with some sense of being able to process our times or some sense of cathartic relief from seeing a story that is processing our times and their working conditions and living conditions of the working class and the proletariat, which is most of us, right? So especially the people involved in their show and their friends and family. So yeah, I just hope that there's something in the show that speaks to them and makes them feel seen in a way in regards to their experience or attitude towards their working conditions and their living conditions.
That is a fantastic idea. Love that. My final question for this first part is, who are you hoping to have access to still waiting for Lefty?
I mean, you hope everyone, right? I mean, that's why you have to charge cheap tickets. I mean, but if you charge expensive tickets, then, you know, people are less inclined to take an evening off, right? But hopefully everyone, I hope. I think there are, you know, again, there's 22 different characters in this show. So I really think if you come, no matter who you are, you will see something that speaks to you. I really believe that there's just endless number of characters, and, you know, there's, we follow multiple storylines, and it's all interconnected, perhaps loosely so, but interconnected. And yeah, I think at any level or any, no matter who you are, there will be something there for you. Believe that. I mean, I guess just in regards to ticket prices, I mean, I've been working for the New York Theater Festival for about 10 years, 100% as an employee. And I've seen the ticket prices go from $18 to $30 in the past, you know, 9 years or so. It's just really driven away a lot of the audience, especially these people coming and trying to put on their really low budget independent show. When you're doing a show at that level, it's pretty safe to assume that a lot of the audience you're trying to reach are not going to be able to pay something like that. And the last thing you want, I mean, really the last thing you want, I think, if you're doing independent art, is to have somebody, when you're trying to amass an audience or trying to get supporters, is to have somebody walk away feeling like they got robbed. So you have to have a certain quality to your show, and it has to be appropriately priced, I think. But it is also, you know, I was an usher for Broadway for 4 years, and apparently the average income for a Broadway going audience member is $200K a year, right? And that is just certainly not most of us, especially not the people who are working in the independent levels of our occupation, of our industry. So that will very quickly and very easily make you incredibly cynical about your art and who has access to it. And yeah, I think there's nothing more important. If you're going into your independent production thinking, oh, well, I got to charge this amount to break even, then you're going to be in for an unpleasant surprise. There is no breaking even, right? You just, you do it, and you have to do it if it's something that you want to do more than anything else. And there really isn't much else to it. Yeah.
Well, on the second part of our show, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pick your brain, if you will. And I would love to start by asking you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
My favorite creator is definitely Martin McDonagh as a playwright and as a filmmaker, right? I mean, he's primarily a playwright first, but he's more well-known as a filmmaker. But yeah, I mean, I think he never has a wasted syllable, right? It's all just so lean and fantastic. I think he's a genius. But yeah, there's been many things over the years. Most of my education was going to see off-Broadway shows. And, you know, if there's anyone listening who's wondering how they can do that when the ticket prices are outrageous, I used to volunteer as an usher for the off-Broadway shows all the time. And you show up, you know, an hour and 15 minutes before the show, you stuff some playbills, and then you show some people to their seats, and then you get to see the show for free. So it's a great deal. It does ask you for some of your time, but I recommend anyone go do that. And I say that like it's easy. It's not necessarily easy. All of these off-Broadway theaters, whether it's Signature or Playwrights Horizons or Second Stage, they'll have tabs where you can inquire about volunteering and people you can reach out to. But of course, there's a lot of people who want to usher. So when they send out this list of, all right, put the dates that you want to usher, you got to get in there quickly, right? Because otherwise they'll fill up. So it is still something that requires a certain amount of time, or, you know, you have to get lucky with when they send that out. I don't do that as much anymore, but for time reasons, and got more snobbish with what I liked as I got older. But yeah, back then I saw just a lot of really wonderful, amazing plays. I think one of the Sticks and Bones by David Rabe at Signature with Helen Hunt and Bill Pullman was just, I'll never forget that show. It's just mind-blowingly good. I saw a lot of really wonderful things. Patron Saint Sea Monsters was amazing. Mercury Fur, Rashida Speaking. I saw all these really, really well done things. And even though the audience is, you know, just the rich of Manhattan, and there's this heartbreak of watching them tell stories about the human experience, and there's only really one type of human in the audience, is very disheartening. But as an education, was invaluable to me, of in terms of seeing, oh, this what works, what doesn't work, what is the American theater audience interested in these days? What are the playwrights who I look up to interested in these days? So yeah, I'd say that was really my education. But you know, there's so many amazing plays. I mean, just looking at my shelf right here, you know, there's all the other famous American playwrights: Eugene O'Neill, John Patrick Shanley, David Mamet, Tennessee Williams, Arthur Miller. But I also really love Naomi Wallace, who had 3 world premieres at Signature over the past few years, which, and I just think she's my second favorite playwright. She's just out of this world good, just an incredibly master application of language and poetry and character. And I hope someday to write something that's 10% as good as her work. But yeah, so I guess to try to bring this back to what you originally asked, Naomi Wallace, Martin McDonagh are some of the big ones, but there's a lot of really amazing ones out there that are there to be read.
That is a fantastic answer. I share my love for those artists as well with you. Well, I know you've been very busy with Still Waiting for Lefty, but I'm curious to know, have you seen any great theater lately you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
I have seen a bunch. I haven't seen anything really great lately, unfortunately. I did see, I'm afraid I don't remember the playwright, but I saw something at the Tank, Midnight Coleslaw's Scary Tales. So Monica, who's their board operator, is the board operator for mine. So I went to go see it because she invited me, and she's great. She saved my show by programming this light board. But yeah, I enjoyed it. There was one part where someone disappears into a couch, and I still don't know how they did it. And it was hilarious and brilliant. So there's that. A friend of mine, Alex Perez, who's a wonderful playwright, who has, if you will eventually know his name, has a play coming out at the Tank, though, at the end of July, July 24th, called The Bad in Each Other. And if you're looking for good theater, I would highly recommend going to see that. You can also pay for $15 tickets. I think those tickets that are $15 are limited, but I know there's still some available. And yes, it's a great show. I've read it and seen it, and Alex is a great writer. So if you're looking for something to go see, I definitely want to plug that.
Amazing. Wow. Let me ask you, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
I mean, I imagine my answer with that would really be the same for anyone in almost any occupation or industry, which is the people, right? When you find people who are really good, really dedicated, and really great people as well, it's a grand slam. It's a home run, because those people are hard to find in general, right? And so when you find those people, I latch onto them and don't let them go for as long as they will let me, in terms of trying to continue to work with them or trying to continue to have them involved in my work. Because so there's just a lot of really great people in the show who I've known for a really long time. Federico Mallet, who's been in the theater scene here for over a decade. He just had a production that he produced and wrote and directed, a telenovela version of Hamlet that was hysterical. And do you know what I'm talking about as well? This too, isn't it hilarious? Yeah. So I mean, that Federico is just one of my oldest friends, and he's in this show, and I always try to involve him because he's just simply one of the most dedicated, most talented, and most kind people you'll ever meet. And it's just such a triple threat that. And but I have a lot of really great triple threats in this show. Ivan Boris, who's in it. I'm gonna feel bad for the people who I forget to mention, but. Gregory, Bill Blackingberg, there's a lot of really great people who are in the show who, yeah, I hope I will always get to work with.
That is a fabulous answer. I am living for these answers. This is wonderful. This is going to be a lot of fun to go back and edit. And that is a great lead-in to my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Oh my God. Oh my God, that's hard to nail down. I mean, I might have to go to just maybe the piece of work I'm most proud of. I did this play in 2017. It was July of 2017. So now, 7 years ago, called Burying Davy. And it was a cast of 10 people, which is pretty large, especially at that time for me. And we were just doing a in a rehearsal studio at Pearl Studios, and the audience, you know, is an audience of like 30 people sitting in a semicircle, and all the actors are just standing right behind the audience, and there's no light changes, there's no nothing. It's just we enter through these aisles to do the scenes, and all the scenes happen right on top of each other. And yeah, it was a 90-minute show that I was just, I think, the most proud of, and the one that when I think of in the past, I discover more about the process or the product. And yeah, so I think being there, you know, there's something special when you're the actor or in the audience in a way. I mean, I'm standing right behind them and sort of experiencing the story with them. And that was, yeah, that was a very special experience. So yeah, since that is the work I think I'm probably most proud of. And I say that having done lots of crap in my life, done lots of not good stuff in my life. But that one, I think the circumstances clicked there in my favor. And yeah, so I guess that would be it.
That is a wonderful memory. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you.
Well, as we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you have any projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
I hope so, you know, but it's unfortunately with these things, when I'm, you know, wearing all the hats and using every ounce of every resource that I have to make it happen, it's just, that's unfortunately always a one project at a time type of thing. I mean, there was a time where I could, you know, throw up really cheap four character tiny black box dramas in a year through conniving and scheming my way into getting space, but as my standards have gotten higher, then so does the necessary resources involved. And yeah, the last thing that I produced before this that I wrote and directed was a film, but that was 2021 that we shot that film. And so yeah, it's been about 3 years, and I really hope it will be less than 3 years before my next one. I really do, but it's hard to know. It's hard to say, because it takes so much saving and time and energy. And it's, yeah, those are all not renewable resources and difficult resources to acquire. So I hope there will be something sooner rather than later, but no, there's nothing that's officially locked in pipeline.
It sounds like you've got some wonderful ideas milling about and some great irons in the fire. So that leads to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Still Waiting for Lefty or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
The LLC that is just, you know, me behind a computer screen is Logophile Productions. So www.logophileproductions.com is the website for it, where you can see all the work I've done in the past. And on the coming soon tab is all the information for Still Waiting for Lefty, where you can also buy tickets. But yeah, and then I'm pretty sure the business email is in there as well, which is just logofilesp. So it's logofilesp as in Paul @gmail.com. And so yeah, always feel free to send me an email there.
Wonderful. Well, Luke, thank you so, so much for taking the time to speak with me today, for sharing your amazing show. As I mentioned, I'm doing everything I can to make sure that I get to catch a performance of this. This sounds so exciting. So congratulations on this great production. And thank you so much today for your time.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for taking the time. And thank you for what you do. It's great to be able to talk about these things with you and with other people in general. So thanks for putting in the time and energy and resources to setting this up.
Thank you so much for that.
Yes, of course.
My guest today has been the amazing playwright and director Luke Bond, who joined us to talk about his new work, Still Waiting for Lefty. It's playing July 4th through the 6th at Teatro Latia. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting teatrolatia.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But right now, you need to head over to teatrolatia.com, get your tickets. It's a very limited run, and you're not going to want to miss this show. We're going to be planning to be there. So make sure you join us for a Stage Whisper night out at the theater. Again, the show is Still Waiting for Lefty, playing July 4th through the 6th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a Stage Whisper!
Thank you.
If If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.